All right, welcome everyone to the March 23rd, 2026 Transportation Finance and Policy Committee hearing. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can hear, view, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, and disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing or obstruction at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak with our sergeant staff. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which today will be about 2 minutes, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply by these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. So thanks everybody for going through that every week as we move forward with things. So first thing we will do is approval of the minutes from March 18th, 2026. Chair Cosens, do you want to do those?
Yes, sir. Can we get back to that? Let me look at them real quick.
Thank you. That sounds good. I do have one. Thank you. All right, then we will move on to the first bill, and we'll circle back to the minutes. So House File 3926, Representative Ream is up at the testifying stand. So Representative Ream, Vice Chair Ream moves that House File 3926 be re-referred to the General Register. Vice Chair Ream, please move your A1 amendment, and then we'll talk about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. Yes, I'd like to move the A1 amendment. I think it should be in your folders. And I do have people to testify to the A1 amendment as well.
All right, so you move the A1 amendment. You'd like testifiers to the A1 amendment? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. Please proceed. Introduce yourself. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, committee members. The A1 simply takes out section one of the bill, and that is the major highway projects thresholds section.
Thank you. All right. All those in favor of the A1 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
A1 prevails. All right. To your bill.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. So House File 3926 is a bill modifying the various transportation-related provisions, which it prohibits the silencing of railroad crossing bells, and it modifies rail service improvement program accounts, and it also removes the authorization for maintenance of Pine Creek Border Airport in Roseau County, and repeals the highway designation for the Hiawatha Pioneer Trail, and makes a few technical corrections. And I do have a testifier here. Once again, Jennifer Witt from MnDOT is here to talk more about the bill.
We have some confusion right now. We are on 3926. We already adopted the A1 amendment. Okay. Can we have Paige grab the A1 amendment? That's all right. It's an author's amendment, so. We will continue. Yeah, Ms. Witt, please continue.
Thank you, and I'm sorry I didn't introduce myself. My name is Jennifer Witt, and I'm from the Minnesota Department of Transportation and Government Affairs. So thank you for having me, chairs and committee members. So this is another of our policy bills. This one's what we're calling an efficiency bill. So we do remove the Piney Pine Creek Airport from statute, and that is because this airport is closed. It was a shared airport between Canada and the United States. Just a little history. We had the airport It was strictly in the United States, and then we decided to extend the runway. And when we wanted to extend it, we couldn't go south, so we had to go north and come up with an agreement with Canada. It took quite a few years, and it was a turf. It was a turf runway, and once Canada got involved, then you know it finally became paved. But the airport really has large maintenance costs, and neither Canada nor MnDOT really want to continue. It only has about 300 flights a day, or a month, excuse me. And so, yeah, it would just be, you know, efficient to take it out. It is closed at this point, and so we're really just taking any reference in statute out.
Thank you. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. you said 300 a month?
Yeah.
So where are they going to go if they're not going there? And who uses it? Is it mainly in Polaris, anyone from Thief River, any of those corporate people using it? And if they're not using that, is there enough capacity around there for them to go to? Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Witt.
Representative Scraba, Chair, Representative Scraba, the airport is closed. I mean, and it has been for over a year. So those flights have already gone to other airports. It would be Roseau, it might be Thief River Falls. I'm not sure. There are quite a few in the area, but this wasn't a big, heavy, you know, commercial kind of airport. So
thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. And I don't know if any other members have questions, but I did want to revert back a little bit and just have a little discussion. The A1 that took out that first section with the major projects. Mm-hmm. First off, I appreciate that we got this briefer from the department. It would have been nice to have that well in advance, but for future planning. But with the major projects, the objective was, as my understanding with previous conversation with the department, was that there are major project reports. It's like a 400-page report. The department wanted to reduce the amount of paperwork and reports that they do. Can you refresh us why that was no longer the case, or the amendment to take that out was supported?
Ms. Witt.
Chair, Representative Kosnick. So, yes, you are correct. We wanted to reduce the number of projects that were considered major because right now those projects that are in that report, you know, we're doing mill and overlays, which are really kind of routine projects and not really deserving of the designation major highway. This was removed because it does affect the greenhouse gas analysis. And so we decided that, you know, we didn't want to have sort of a controversial piece in our policy bill. And so we pulled that out.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, and I can appreciate the position of not wanting to have that in there and kind of avoid any hiccups. But it does lead us to the discussion that I think is very relevant, Mr. Chair and committee members. Can you explain to us how that would affect the greenhouse gas mitigation law and offsets?
Ms. Witt.
Co-chair, I don't know how it interacts physically, but in the language, the major highway projects report thresholds, those thresholds that we are attempting to raise for the report, are the same thresholds that the greenhouse gas analysis for mitigation uses as well.
Chair Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just to kind of clarify then, with the reports that MnDOT is doing, are you also required to plan out the greenhouse gas mitigation offsets within those reports as well?
Ms. Witt.
Chair Kosnick. So, no, I don't believe so. I mean, we're talking about that sort of a separate issue. This is for a larger sort of an analysis within the department that we would do to decide whether any capacity project needs greenhouse gas mitigation.
Chair Kosnick.
I'm not trying to belabor this, but I think it's an important discussion to have. At what point does MnDOT start doing the mitigation offset planning for these major projects? and will that be reported? My point being is that we have county commissioners, local entities that are looking at safety improvement projects, slight expansions to make their communities congestion flow better in that, and they're going to undertake a rather time and expense to figure this out. So at what point does MnDOT get involved and also do their own planning on this law, the mitigation offsets, and at what stage is MnDOT prepared to fully release what all the how that program will work?
Ms. Witt, do you need to phone a friend on this, or are you good?
Maybe.
Okay. Mr. Rudine, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And the GHG requirements are currently in law. So if a project were to come into the program and it met the dollar threshold and the definition of an expansion project, so a grade separation or adding a lane more than 2,500 feet, we would analyze that project. Really, though, it's as we develop the STIP, because anything already in the STIP was exempted, so it's as we update the STIP every year. So that really means projects that are basically 4 years out or beyond in the program are the projects that will be subject to the analysis and then potential mitigation or offset if required.
Chair Gossett.
Thank you. Just to follow up then, I appreciate that explanation. So when projects start getting added to the STIP, then MnDOT itself will be help having to figure out, and it would be included in this major projects reports, what offsets would be required for each major project. Is that a good understanding?
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, I don't think the major projects report is actually where you would see that analysis and description. I think it would be kind of a separate process from the major projects report where we would go through the analysis and identifying the offsets that would be required.
Okay, we'll follow up a little bit more offline, but I guess what I wanted to generally understand is how far along the process of fully understanding the implementation and having the greenhouse gas mitigation offsets completed and thought out so that our counties and local cities, counties, practitioners can actually do their own analysis if that's required on a project that they're working on. And so we'll have more. I don't want to take up more time, but my understanding is that there's still a committee working on it and we don't have it figured out yet completely. Is that true?
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, there is a technical advisory committee that exists to help the commissioner with this process. That is, I believe, a permanent committee, but it's not to sort of, what I'll say is we have a process already established. It's on our website. So the process for analyzing any expansion project, we have that figured out today. That exists. We have not had a project yet come forward that is required to go through this process, but we, you know, there are already sort of a couple out there on the horizon that we know we'll have to go through eventually.
Chair Kosnick.
Thanks. I appreciate the answers, and you know, we'll try to talk offline and work through that with some of the concerns that I'm hearing out there, but I appreciate the time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right. So the A1 amendment is being passed out. So then we also have the A3 amendment. Chair Kosnick, I understand that you or someone from the GOP side is taking the A3 amendment. The township roads.
I thought that was maybe an author's amendment, but do you want to author it? Otherwise, I'm happy to as well.
Chair Kosnick, you got it.
I will offer the A3 amendment.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Ream, do you have anything to say about it first, or?
This is something that the townships have been working on. I do have a testifier from the townships.
Okay, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Graham Berg-Moberg. I am with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I just want to start by thanking the co-chairs, Mr. Kosnick and Mr. Tabney-Keefe, for hearing this amendment. So, okay, just going briefly through this, Section 1 is related to 160.05. This would return it to its status before 2020. The issue here is that by its terms, current text would essentially require us to send notice every time we mow the lawn. And so we're kind of working back from that one. Section 2, this one is to deal with a situation where, you know, thanks to consolidation, what was once a street that was serving four or five family farms is now serving only one, but it would leave very clearly a protected right for that person to access their land, along with certain procedures to make sure that public funding would still be available potentially for that. Section 3, also pretty straightforward here. So it's updating the appeal number in our road order statute. So this is 164.07 subdivision 7. Last time this thing was touched was 1959. So this is just adjusting for inflation, essentially.
Representative Ream, any further discussion on the amendment?
No, thank you.
Chair Kosnick,
for hearing that.
I support the amendment.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. All right. To the underlying bill, Representative Ream, do you anybody have questions, discussion? Closing comments, Chair Kosnick? Vice Chair Ream.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. Yeah, and we could talk a little bit, I think, about the railroad crossing bills. We have had some situations where cities have asked to prohibit and silence them, and I think that would be very dangerous, and that's why we need to add this language here, and Jennifer Witt is also here to testify to that.
Ms. Witt, please proceed.
Chair, committee members, so the we're just asking to prohibit the commissioner's ability to silence those bells. This isn't the quiet zone. This isn't the train horn. That's a different matter. But this is the bells on the gates that come down, you know, when a train is coming. And some other pieces in there is mercy. There's a mercy provision. Everybody knows what the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program is, right? Mercy. This is to clear up some language in there because last year we weren't able to, or there's uncertainty about what the statute means. It was always a loan program, and then it became a grant program, and then last year we tried to give a loan, and we weren't able to, and so we need to clean up the language because we'd like to give loans as well.
Thank you. All right. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Question on the bells.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming back in the day they were regular, like, metal bells, and they went ding, ding, ding when the thing went up and down. And now I'm assuming they're electronic, and they can be controlled on the time. What's the average length of time that bell rings that everybody feels like they can't hear anymore? Because I'm falling on your side.
Ms. Witt.
Thank you. Chair, Representative Scraba, I don't know the average time. I do know they are connected to the gates, and so when the train comes and, you know, hits a certain mark, right, or a certain like lever in the rails, they come down and the bells also come on. So they're all sort of integrated within each other. And it isn't that we couldn't silence them, it's just that we really don't think we should. This is sort of a national conversation the commissioner has had. And other groups are in favor of us prohibiting any commissioner from silencing those bells.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, final questions? All right, thank you very much. Any else? Closing comments, Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. Thank you for hearing this bill. I was going to mention one more thing. We are repealing the highway designation for the Hiawatha Pioneer Trail. This was created many years ago as kind of a marketing gimmick, if you will, to get people to drive through four different states. I think it's Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin. I'm blanking on the
Illinois.
Fourth one. Illinois. It's kind of like Route 66. It was a way to get people to drive through the area and then, you know, improve the economy of those areas. And that is no longer being used. All the other states have removed them, and so we want to clean that up and remove those signs from our state as well.
Perfect. Thank you. Any discussion on the bill? Nope. With that, Chair, Vice Chair Ream renews her motion. The House File 3926, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much. Yep, we'll do minutes. We'll go back to Representative Ream next. We're going to do a couple housekeeping first. Chair Kozak, minutes.
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the March 18th, 2026 minutes.
Chair Kozak moves to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Kozak. A couple other housekeeping items is that we have had House File 3685 on the agenda for today, which was collector car plates, and we are not going to hear that today. That was came from a collector car collector advocate to us that we thought was a very good, happy, feel-good bill that everyone would be on board with and sing kumbaya together, and turns out that's just not the case. So we pulled that from the agenda for not again this year. So we'll discuss those sometime. Someone will, maybe in the future. So we've got that. And I also want to encourage everyone, law enforcement, LELS is down in the vault today, and so they're down and they've got simulators, they've got like AV, like tasers that you can use, and it's really pretty cool. So I encourage everybody to get down there before 3 o'clock. Obviously it's a riveting meeting and whatnot, but we're done here at 2:45, so they're down in the vault until 3 o'clock, so just want to make sure everybody knows that. So House File 4062, Representative Ream, would you like to move your bill for House File 4062 to be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, thank you, Chair Tapke. I would like to move it to the General Register. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to explain your bill, and then we'll have go to your testifiers.
Thank you. So House File 4062 is basically a DVS technical correction bill. The proposal makes targeted corrections to Minnesota statutes to improve consistency, clarity, and administrative efficiency within the title and registration system. It addresses two issues identified by driver and vehicle services. It will align statutory deadlines for vehicle title transfers and correct language related to rental vehicle plates. The proposal does not create any new policy direction, and it ensures existing law functions as originally intended by the legislature. So the vehicle title transfer deadline, in 2024, we passed legislation to extend the time frame to transfer a vehicle title from 10 to 20 days. However, not all of the related statutes were updated, so that created some inconsistent deadlines across our laws. So this will update the statutes, making all of them a 20-day application window. And the second part is over vehicle or rental vehicle plates, another technical correction. It removes the word non-commercial from the statute, and it restores legislative intent, allowing rental companies to register and plate one-ton pickup trucks. And it will ensure that rental companies can operate as intended. And I do have a testifier here, too.
Thank you very much. Director Zhang, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. And I also have prepared comments, but Representative Ream was very thorough in her explanation. I will stand for questions.
Thank you. Any questions? That was my favorite testimony of the day so far, yes. Representative Scrava.
Very briefly, the register, where it went to 10 to 20 days, which I appreciate, does it mean that the mail needs to be time-stamped within that 20 days, not get to you? Because I can tell you in St. Paul, between where I live in Ely and St. Paul, I can mail a letter the same day, and they do not get there. Mine get there faster than here. So my concern is, if there is a lag in the thing, just as long as it's stamped, that's what it means, correct?
Director Zhang.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scrava, for registrations in this context, it would have to be done in person or through the dealer if they're eligible to do registrations. So that's not that's typically what would fall under this 20-day requirement. I think what you're describing are renewals, and yes, renewals, there's a much more kind of broad window that we can operate in for the renewals. As long as we receive them in time, we can update the in-drive to reflect the renewal.
Representative Scrava.
Very briefly, any person who fails to mail in the application for registration or transfer with the appropriate taxes and everything. I'm at a loss when you said that you either go to the register or the dealer. Why does it say mail in the statute then? Thank
Director
you.
John.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scrabble, you are correct. There is very rarely used. Individuals can choose to register their own vehicles when they transfer a title. It's very, very rare. But in that case, we would take the mail date on the envelope. But it's a very uncommon situation.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair. In Section 1.14 on this bill, it says within 20 calendar days following the date of the sale, is guilty of a misdemeanor. I look at that as, is that, you know, before it said shall be, and now it says is. So say somebody has a tragic event and they didn't get the vehicle. Now are they automatically guilty of a misdemeanor? Or before there seemed like there was discretionary, and now it says is guilty.
We're going to throw this one to Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, I would read that as a technical change. Shall be is a kind of older drafting style statement of establishing something through passive voice, and is kind of the modern drafting technique. So that's among a number of technical cleanup items that are found throughout the bill.
Representative Joy.
I wouldn't see a substantive change in what the enforcement procedures would be under a violation of that provision.
Representative Joy.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm going with that, is if somebody did have a tragic event and something happened and they mailed it in and it showed the date that they sold was past 20 days, you know, I just don't want to see somebody get forced on a guilty charge for not, you know, for what happens in life. And so when it says shall, I know there's discretionary. I just want to make sure we still have that discretionary so we're not forcing people with charges. Thank you.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none. Closing comments, Representative Ream.
Thank you for hearing my bill.
Thank you. With that, Representative Ream, Vice Chair Ream, renews her motion. Gotta get to the right page. Her motion that House File 4063, as amended, am I on the wrong one? 4062, be re-referred to the General Register. Is that right? Okay, awesome. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. All right, on to the next one from Representative Ream on Policy Day. We've got 4063, stopping requirements for vehicles approaching school buses. Vice Chair Ream moves that House File 4063 be re-referred to the General Register. And you also have an A1 amendment, Representative Ream. Would you like to move that?
Yes.
Representative Ream moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. All right, Representative Ream, to your bill, please explain.
So House File 4063 basically has four different sections. The first one is the school bus stop arm violations. So in 2025, the Court of Appeals ruled State versus Wallum that a violation occurs only when the stop arm is fully extended, which creates a very unsafe environment for our school bus drivers and the children. And right now, our current language really makes it difficult to determine the exact moment a violation does occur. So this proposal will amend the statute to require traffic to stop when red lights on a school bus begin flashing, not when the stop arm is fully extended. So this would make it much clearer for student safety and make it much more enforceable. The second part is requiring type three school buses have first aid kits that are up to date. So right now, type 3 buses are currently required to carry a 10-unit first aid kit. This proposal would align with the national recommended standards and include self-updating statutory language. This would only apply to type 3 school buses, model year 2027 and newer. The third part is for U.S. Department of Transportation numbers for school buses. Right now, the Minnesota State Patrol is legislatively mandated to inspect all school buses. However, not all school buses have a number on them. So this change would only affect a small number of buses, and there's no cost to obtain a USDOT number, so that should be a relatively simple change. And then the last one is about school bus use for training. Federal regulations require behind-the-wheel training in the same type of vehicle a commercial driver's license applicant plans to drive. However, right now, Minnesota statute does not allow behind-the-wheel training in a yellow school bus on public roads. So the training is only limited to private roads, which can be very costly. There's no safety reason for this restriction. So this proposal would allow behind-the-wheel training in school buses on private roads, and the buses would be labeled plainly as student driver. And that would allow for licensed commercial driving schools to use buses on public roads for their training. And I do have someone here to testify as well.
Thank you very much. Lieutenant Rue, would you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lieutenant Brian Rue, Minnesota State Patrol. I serve as the State Director of Pupil Transportation, so I oversee a lot of the areas with the school bus inspection program, school bus safety, and work closely with the school bus industry. Just to add a little bit of context to Representative Green's statements, which she did very well walking through it. There's one definition change under school bus, which coincides with that need to be able to use the school buses for training without having to repaint and remark them. Section two, as she talked about, was the stop arm violation, which you guys passed out of committee as a standalone bill, and I believe you might actually hear it on the floor today, so appreciate the continued support. That, again, was language we worked on with the industry, had it in our package, but felt the need to move it a little bit more expeditedly through its own process. The USDOT number, as you referenced, that is, we use an inspection reporting process or program as a part of our commercial vehicle section, and that program requires us to enter everything in there with the USDOT number. We've, through for years, have had districts and contractors get them without really limited pushback. Occasionally, we're getting some companies that are looking to get into it and saying, well, where does it say we have to have one? And for us to be able to enter them into our inspection program and then to be able to post the results publicly, it's all categorized with that number. So we're just asking for the support of the law to help back that requirement. Again, as she referenced, it doesn't cost them anything to get. They can get it online within a matter of minutes. And it's not pulling in any additional regulations on them for having that USDOT number. It's just simply for us to be able to track them in our reporting system. And then to publicly publish the results of how the school bus companies are doing on their annual inspections. And then with the Type 3 first aid kits, again, the 10 unit is it's antiquated equipment in some of it, talking about like a padded tongue blade, which you can't even get anymore. It comes out of a rescinded rule. It's the only place you can actually find the content requirements. We put it in our manual so industry can find it, but we're looking to standardize it across school buses in general. What the Type 3 school bus is, it's the minivans, passenger cars, not your traditional yellow bus that you used to see, but they're still doing school transportation. So just to give them all the same first aid kit as the intent. So with that, I will stand for any other questions.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Rue. Representative Scrava.
Very briefly, the first aid kit can contain more, but if, because some areas have different kits, but they must contain what you want here. Is that
Lieutenant.
Fair to say? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, this is the minimum expectation of what needs to be in there. And like I said, it's.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about the DOT requirement. It says you need to obtain one. Do they need to have it visible? Does it need to be on the vehicle? Or because it doesn't say that in here. Or can they just have it in the glove box or whatever?
Lieutenant.
Mr. Chair, Representative and members, there is not a requirement that they display it. They just need to have it so we can track it and link it to their company name, school district name, whatever it is for our purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Chair Cousins.
Just real quick, I don't know that we need a fiscal note, but there isn't one on this bill, if that's right. But how is there not a cost to the school bus operators to update their first aid kits?
Lieutenant, you want to take that or Representative Ream? Lieutenant, go for it.
Mr. Chair, Chair Kosnick, members, there's no cost to the agency. The requirement is for new vehicles being introduced into the Type 3 realm of transportation after vehicle model year 2027 and newer. So they're equipping these vehicles with first aid kits for the first time, essentially. It's, I believe, about $25 to $35 additional fee for the 24-unit versus the old outdated 10-unit first aid kit. So there's an added cost to the districts or the carriers. Per se, or as they swap them out.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you for that clarification. So they're kind of going to phase in, I guess. But I know that there was a little bit of concern about that in the past. I think we're ready to move the bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Closing comments, Representative Ream.
Yes, thank you for hearing this bill. I was going to say that I my understanding is that the first aid kits cost $25 to $35 right now. Moving from a 10-unit school kit to a 40 or to a 24-unit kit would be an additional $10 to $15. I think the current kits cost $40 to $55, so it's a very small increase in price. And it's for very few vehicles, too. But thank you for hearing this bill. This, I think, is a lot of common sense proposals here, and I encourage everyone to support this bill.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Ream. So with that, Vice Chair Ream renews her motion that House File 4063, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. All right. Now we have House File 4065. So the next bill is House File 4065. Vice Chair Ream moves that House File 4065 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. So originally we were going to send this to General Register, but our GOP colleague, Co-Chair Kozik would like this to go to Public Safety, and I agree with that, so we're going to refer it to Public Safety Committee. And Vice Chair Ream, you have an A1 author's amendment?
Yes, the A1 amendment. I believe it's Representative or Vice Chair Myers' amendment.
Representative Myers, A1 amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Ream. I know we had a little bit of a discussion this weekend. So this came about from my work on the Labor Committee 2 years ago when we had testimony in regards to TNC drivers and the assaults that take place on them. And they're a vital part to our transportation, network. Places like my district don't have a lot of transportation options, so I want to make sure that we're trying to protect as many workers as possible. And additionally, there was a task force by Governor Walz put together with, I think, 24 points on it. And, in that report, the 22nd point was ensuring, specific assaults on drivers. So what this amendment does is just includes those transportation network drivers, and I would ask that you accept the amendment.
Vice Chair Ream.
Thank you, Chair Tapke and Vice Chair Myers. I would like to work with you in good faith on this. I certainly agree that rideshare workers should not face a tax at work, but there's not much precedent here for extending these kind of protections to public servants. And if we do expand the scope of this bill, my concern is that it would delay the passage of this bill. Probably would require a trip to the Judiciary Committee, and I would not want it to be delayed, so I am not supporting this amendment.
Thank you very much. Discussion on the amendment. We'll come back to you in a little bit. Any other discussion? Vice Chair Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Ream. I think this was pretty well vetted on the task force. It's got bipartisan support. This is actually something I worked on with Representative Hussein. I'm really hopeful that this committee can move forward with this, put this amendment on here, move it to public safety, and I don't think there'll be any delay, so I would ask members to support it.
Thank you very much. Representative Myers moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. All right. Now, Representative Ream, if you could please describe your bill, 4065.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. House File 4065 is a bill that clarifies the criminal penalty provisions for assaulting transit workers. We change the language from transit operators to workers and then define who those transit workers are. And that's in 1.14. A transit worker is an employee, contractor, or volunteer working in public transportation or transit as defined under section 473.121, subdivision 19. And I do have someone here to testify to the bill as well.
Ms. Canderas, thanks for being here. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chair Tapke, committee members. My name is Leslie Candaris. I serve as the general manager at Metro Transit, a division of the Metropolitan Council. Thank you, Representative Ream and co-author Chair Tapke, for introducing this Metropolitan Council initiative, HF4065, a bill to clarify the criminal penalty provisions for assaulting transit workers. And thank you for the opportunity to say just a few words about why the Metropolitan Council is pursuing this change in law. This proposal would apply the enhanced penalties currently in Minnesota statutes for assaulting transit operators to other transit workers. Today, operators, the people who drive buses and trains, are covered, as are Metro Transit police officers who are under the peace officer provision of statute. But this bill would apply to other transit workers who are absolutely essential to making transit happen but aren't currently covered under the law. As Metro Transit adds more frontline workers, including our Transit Rider Investment Program, or TRIP agents, community service officers, public facility workers, and other frontline positions that are absolutely crucial to providing transit, we believe there should be parity in the penalty for assault across all these groups. And this is important because without transit workers, there is no transit. The safety of our employees, as well as our riders, is our top priority. At Metro Transit, we currently have about 3,500 employees. Those figures don't include our contracted workers, who would also be covered under this change in the bill. So again, we believe this is an important step forward to really conveying that we value all the employees who do this work tirelessly, often in challenging conditions, in order to deliver safe, clean, and reliable transit that our region relies on. So I'll stop there. I'll just note that with me today for Metro Transit, I have Brian Funk, our Deputy General Manager and Chief Operating Officer, Chief Joe Dotseth, our Chief of Police, and Andrew Brody, our Chief Safety Officer, who can help answer questions. Also, there are members of ATU Local 1005 here today. We have Pat Davern here, who's an operator, and President David Stiggers, who I believe is here for another matter on the committee's agenda, is present as well. So thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much to Chief Dotseth for being here today. Congratulations on the new gig, official new gig. So thank you very much for that. Is there anyone else who would like to testify that's in the audience on this bill today? All right, seeing none, moving to discussion. Any discussion? Do you want to go first or any discussion on this one? I just want to say thank you very much for bringing this forward. Like, this is a really big, important thing that we make sure to protect our drivers throughout the transit system. So I appreciate you bringing this forward and pushing this initiative. Chair Kosnick.
We agree. We can sing kumbaya here.
Look at us go.
thanks for the bill, and it is an important component to providing transit that people want to use. If they're scared to use transit, and it's well documented, I'm not here to beat up on the issues. We know what they are. I'm glad that in past couple sessions we did work on trying to improve the safety of that. This goes another step to ensure that for our workers, not just the drivers. And going back to Representative Meyer's amendment previously, I think it's unfortunate that we didn't pass that, and I'm tempted to bring it to reconsideration because our transportation network drivers and are just as important part of our transit system. They may not be state-run, but they provide an enormous amount of rides in our communities to get people where they need to go. Especially in the suburbs, people going out a night on the town and a reliable ride home. There are issues there with those drivers, and I really think we should consider, I don't know that it would be that much of an ask of the legislature to include transportation network drivers to also be protected in the same manner that this bill does for our Metro Transit drivers and other employees. And I don't want to put the committee in a hot spot to reconsider that bill, but if the committee, as we've talked about it a little bit more, thinks that's the right way to go, I don't know that it would slow down this bill getting passage. It's got to go to public safety as well because of the increased violation. But I think there's generally good agreement on this, and I think it just makes sense. So thank you for the bill. I think it could go a little further with Representative Myers' proposal as well.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Closing comments, Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Tabke, and thank you, Chair Kosnick and Vice Chair Myers, for your comments. I certainly agree that we need to protect all our workers, but to keep this bill moving and keep it non-controversial, I'd prefer to keep it as it is, and I'm certainly willing to have further discussions with Vice Chair Myers and Representative Hussein to improve all the all the labor rights and conditions for our workers. So thank you.
Thank you. Closing comments on the bill? You're good? Okay. With that, Vice Chair Ream renews her motion that House File 4065 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Vice Chair Ream. Great job with the marathon of bills there. You did really well. Now we have House File 4216. Representative Sensenmira. Representative Sensenmira would moves House File 4216 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members. This is House File 4216 is a bill about autonomous vehicles in Minnesota. If you feel like you've seen this movie before, you probably have multiple times this session in this committee. I do have a DE amendment.
Thank you very much.
Not DE, sorry, an A1.
Okay, exactly, an A1.
Almost a DE.
And it is an author's amendment. It's a pretty vast author's amendment, so let's just walk through it if we could.
Yeah. So it updates a few of the definitions from automated driving system, dynamic driving task, operational design domain. It also adds some different representatives to the advisory board that we are asking to study and make recommendations about autonomous vehicles. It adds some requirements about what we want the advisory board to study, including doing a study about VMT, vehicle miles traveled. It also adds some language around wheelchair accessibility for these autonomous vehicles, and then it updates some of the language about having an independent study or independent safety verification from the state, a permitting process for safety of autonomous vehicle companies by the state.
Thank you very much. So this is the author's A1 amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. All right, Representative, and you are?
Dave Snyder. I'm testifying in favor of the bill.
Got it. Thank you very much. Could you go take a seat for a moment? You're a little eager, and I appreciate all of it. It's very good, but we're just not there yet. So thank you. With that, Representative Mira, will you please explain your bill and where we're going?
Good afternoon, chairs and members. Thank you for agreeing to hear House File 4216. As we all know, our committee has been engaged in a robust discussion on the future of transportation here in Minnesota and the role for autonomous vehicles in that future. I have heard from constituents across our state with excitement about what a future with autonomous vehicles can be in terms of safety, tourism, and innovation. And at the same time, I've heard deep fear and concern about what this can mean for the safety of passengers. Can these cars really drive on Minnesota roads? I've heard concerns about job security for our rideshare drivers. I've heard concerns around what data may be collected by these autonomous vehicle companies. And I've heard really strongly about the need for government to play a real role in regulating and safeguarding new technology. HF 4216 simply says that before we allow companies to deploy autonomous vehicle fleets on Minnesota public roads, we should first understand the impacts on communities, workers, and public safety. Right now, there are just too many unknowns. Across the country, autonomous vehicle companies are aggressively and sometimes controversially moving quickly into new markets, with policymakers and the public often left reacting after problems emerge instead of preparing beforehand. Minnesota has the opportunity right now to make a different and smarter approach. This bill establishes an independent advisory board that brings together voices from across the state, including workers, local government, disability advocates, consumer representatives, and state agencies that can address the fundamental questions about safety standards, liability, infrastructure impacts, and how these remotely controlled vehicles interact with emergency responders and other road users. We have already seen situations in other states where autonomous vehicles behaved unpredictably in complex traffic environments. In Arizona, a Waymo robo-taxi was seen stopped in incoming traffic. In San Francisco, Waymo vehicles stopped during a blackout, and there is concern that the vehicles are driving there more aggressively over time. In Texas, there is concerning footage of a Waymo vehicle that seems to be blocking first responders. Minnesota presents its own unique road challenges, as we all know, from just our March blizzard last week. We have severe winter weather, dense urban corridors, and regional transportation needs. Before we allow commercial deployment, we must be confident that these systems can operate safely in Minnesota conditions. At the same time, thousands of Minnesotans currently work as rideshare and commercial drivers who play a critical role in our transportation system, and I'm happy that we have true bipartisan support from that based on the conversation that we just had. This legislation requires an independent economic analysis so that we can truly understand potential workforce displacement and the ripple effects on working families, small businesses, and local economies. Members, there is not an urgent timeline forcing Minnesota to legalize autonomous vehicles as fast as possible, even if companies may make us feel otherwise. So let's pause and pass this bill, which does three simple things. Number one, establish a robust advisory board with key stakeholders to study the impacts of autonomous vehicles and make recommendations. Two, establish a state permitting process to certify autonomous vehicle companies. And three, ensure that while we continue to study and develop policy, a human operator remains in the vehicle who has the ability to intervene if necessary. We have a responsibility to Minnesotans to ensure that if autonomous vehicles eventually do operate in our state, they do so under rules informed by independent research, public input, and careful consideration. We have the opportunity today to learn from the experiences of other states, and I hope we take that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Centromere. We have some testifiers who are here. Mr. Stiggers, would you please come up, and then Mr. Spica is after them. So just be on deck. Mr. Stiggers, thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it. If you would please state your name for the record and proceed.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Tapke and co-chairs and committee members. My name is David Stiggers. I'm the president of the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005 here in Minnesota. I represent over the 3,000 frontline workers who move the city every day. I'm also a veteran bus driver of 16 years. I rise in support of HF 4216. An empty 40-foot diesel transit bus typically weighs between 25,000 and 33,000 pounds. When fully loaded with standing and seated passengers, the GVWR is usually set between 35,000 and 44,000. We are talking about commercial vehicles that can weigh up to 22 tons, moving through our neighborhoods, past our schools, through busy intersections, and alongside pedestrians, cyclists, and transit riders. When a vehicle of that size is operating without a human operator, the margin of error becomes very, very small. HF 4216 exists because before we allow that kind of technology on our Minnesota roads, we should have clear rules, clear oversight, and clear accountability. If this bill were struck down, we would be opening the door to the operation of massive unmanned vehicles without a comprehensive regulatory framework in place. That means fewer guardrails for how these vehicles interact with emergency responders, fewer protections for pedestrians and cyclists, and fewer answers about who is responsible when something goes wrong. A malfunction in a small consumer device might be an inconvenience, but a malfunction in a 22-ton vehicle traveling down a public street can become a life-threatening event in seconds. Human operators today make thousands of judgment calls every day that technology still struggles to replicate. They recognize when someone is in distress, when a child steps into the street, when a person in crisis needs assistance, or when an unexpected situation requires immediate human intervention. Without the safeguards established in HF 4216, Minnesota would be risk allowing these large unmanned machines onto public roads before the state has properly addressed those safety realities. Innovation should not come at the expense of community safety. HF 4216 ensures that if autonomous vehicles are introduced in Minnesota, they are introduced responsibly with the protections the public deserves. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Siggers. And I neglected to remind everyone that we're at 2 minutes for testimony, and you were spot on. So thank you very much for that. Mr. Summerspica, please. Oh, sorry. Ms., I apologize for that. Please state your name for the record and how I butchered your name, so I apologize again probably. But please state your name for the record and proceed.
It's okay. My name is Summer Spica. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Summer Spica. I live in St. Paul with my kids. I'm here today as a Minnesotan who lives with epilepsy and as someone who has spent most of my adult life advocating for seniors and people with disabilities. Because of my condition, I have had seizures, including multiple, that caused me to crash my car because I lost consciousness before I fully understood my health condition. Thankfully, I was never seriously hurt in a car crash, but it was both a scary life moment and also scary to think about not having the power to drive myself around. So many Minnesotans face challenges like mine, which is why transit and ride services are so essential. I also am someone who has always understood the challenges facing workers and the challenges facing people with disabilities are connected. I have no illusion that big corporations care about us. They never have and never will. They'd sell out of jobs and safety for one more dollar of profit. I'd say for the people here today who seem more concerned about looking pro-tech than pro-workers and pro-safety, you are part of the problem that has gotten us in this political crisis. I'm here today in support of HF 4216 that would simply ensure that these robot cars would be safe and these big tech companies wouldn't hurt workers in our community. It seems so common sense. If anyone here is a parent of a teenager, you probably know like I do the dangers of tech companies. Why would we trust this company to be safe on our roads and not undermine jobs? What track record do tech companies have that would make you think we need to skip the step of making sure? People with disabilities want what all Minnesotans want, the ability to live our lives with as much health and safety as possible. I urge you to not use my community as a shield to benefit a big tech company who doesn't care less about Minnesotans. Please pass HF 4216 to really study this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Speaker. I appreciate it. Abi Rashid Muhammad is next, followed by Eid Ali after that.
Thanks for being here.
Please state your name for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Yeah. Thank you. Chair and member of committee, my name is Abi Rashid Muhammad, and I've been ride share since 2018. I'm here today with SEIU, Rideshare Drivers Organization Committee. I'm here today to ask you to take seriously Waymo and support the bill that studies what this could mean for Minnesotans. I want to give you a few histories about that drivers like me do what automatic cars could never do. One ride I pick up, I was to pick up a woman who came outside and followed by a man, and they were clearly fighting. Instead of letting her get into my car, he grabbed her and pulled her back to his house. I saw this happen and I called 911. I waited for the cops to come and make sure that they knew where this happened, and they got her to safety. One ride I saw, I was going to the airport, and I was to pick up this lady. When I arrived for her, and I waited the full time, waiting time was up. Instead of leaving her, I called her multiple times until I woke her up, and she rushed out, and she was thankful that I helped her not to miss her flight, which robocars will never and can never do. I helped so many people who were also blind, including recently are getting out of helping someone find a staircase he needed to find. And I've also helped people in wheelchairs to get into the car and help their chair into the trunk. I cannot even account the numbers of times I have gotten out and helped elderly person get their bags into the trunk because they are struggling to lift it, which robocars will never do. One time I was helping an elderly woman who broke her leg. I helped her to get into her house. We often pick up from hospital, clinics, and help them when they hurt, which robocars will never and can never do. Tell me which of these things automated cars can do. Do you care about Minnesotans, or do you care just about Waymo? This doesn't cover all the videos that we have seen on social media about erratic driving by these cars. Why we don't take time and find out if they are safe here, especially in the snow? What's the rush? I hope you vote yes on this bill to consider the concern of so many of us around safety, jobs, and more past this bill to actually research what this would mean. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Muhammad. Next we have Eid Ali, followed by Dave Snyder.
Mr. Chair.
Just
and
a point of order,
hold on
Chair.
Just a second, Mr. Ali. Yes, Chair Kazing.
I appreciate the testimony that we're hearing. I just want to point out to the public and the community when we've talked about this in the bill that I've authored on autonomous vehicles, that we are looking at the broader policy. It is not a bill for one particular company. I think it's a little out of decorum to mischaracterize or besmirch a company's interest in Minnesota, specifically Waymo, and I just prefer that the audience refrain from disparaging them.
Thank you, Chair Kozak. Mr. Ali, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Eid Ali. I am the president of Minnesota Uber and Lyft Drivers Association, also known MULDA. I represent thousands of rideshare drivers across Minnesota who rely on this work to support their families. Thank you for the opportunity again to speak today. We appreciate the intent behind HR 4216 and the work being done to position Minnesota as a leader in innovation and emerging technology. Let me be clear. Drivers support innovation. We recognize that autonomous vehicles technology is part of the future, and we want Minnesota to move forward in a thoughtful and responsible way. At the same time, we believe innovation works best when it includes strong safety and standards and community input. As this bill moves forward, we respectfully offer a few recommendations to strengthen it, ensuring clear safety standards and oversight as the technology evolves, maintaining accountability and transparency for all operators, including driver voices at the table so that the most affected are part of the conversation. Rideshare drivers are an important part of the Minnesota transportation system today. For many, this work is their primary source of income and supports their families and communities. That's why it's important that as we plan for the future, we also think about a responsible transition that considers the impact on workers. We believe HR 4216 is an important step forward, and with continued collaboration, it can become a model for how innovation and fairness go hand in hand. MULDA stands ready to work with lawmakers, industry, and stakeholders to help get this right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Mr. Snyder, followed by Corey Marshall. Mr. Hello. Snyder, thank you for being here. State your name for the record, and please proceed.
Okay. Hello again. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for letting me come up and speak. My name is Dave Snyder, and I live in Richfield. I'm here to speak in support of House File 4216. During the ICE surge, I was one of those people who spent a lot of time on mutual aid, helping my neighbors get groceries and rides and so forth, and working with local faith communities and parents. There were a lot of people that wanted to help. Sometimes our urgency got in the way of making really good, wise decisions. And we did our best work when we took the time to talk to the people who were most impacted on the front lines and different stakeholders. And generally good partnerships and effective partnerships followed. So we had one example of getting food to folks where I heard from a tenant at one of the big complexes that she wasn't getting food that was appropriate for folks. There were a couple of pregnant women in the complex and people that they weren't getting the right kinds of foods. And so I spoke with the management there, and I spoke with a local food shelf that was doing deliveries, and they said, we're coming with a mobile unit, but nobody's coming out for food because they're too afraid to leave their apartments. And then I spoke to a local Hispanic grocery, and we ended up raising money to buy groceries for people and delivering them. And the grocery was able to make payroll, and people got their good food. The same thing happened with rides. People were afraid to trust a random driver, and they
Mr.
were
Mr. Snyder, you're going to run out of time very
okay.
quickly.
Last sentence.
Thank
to
you.
Drive to work, and we ended up partnering with the rideshare riders to get people to work, and we were able to build trust. And I appreciated the human element and the human trust that we built with riders and our local residents. So I hope that you'll consider 4216. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier is on Zoom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Corey Marshall, Senior Director of State and Local Public Policy for the Chamber of Progress. We are a tech industry association committed to ensuring all people benefit from technological progress. I'm here today to respectfully urge you to oppose HF 4216. This bill would effectively ban commercial autonomous vehicles in Minnesota. Through its multi-year study requirement and its mandate that human safety drivers be present at all times, that would be a serious mistake for Minnesota's safety, economy, and future. Let's start with safety. Between 2019 and 2023, over 2,000 Minnesotans lost their lives in traffic accidents, and nearly 120,000 of those folks were injured. At least 94% of those crashes were caused by human error, impairment, distraction, and speeding. AVs remove that human error. Beyond safety, AVs mean opportunity. Expanding AV adoption could create 455,000 jobs nationwide, 82%, with pay above the median wage. And for freight, our trucking industry faces a severe driver shortage and nearly 90% annual turnover. AV trucking can reduce delays, lower logistics costs, and ultimately bring prices down for Minnesotan families. HF 4216 doesn't regulate autonomous vehicles. It bans them. We urge the committee to oppose this bill and keep Minnesota competitive, safe, and open to innovation. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marshall. All right. Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? All right. Seeing none, we're going to move on to questions. Representative Olson.
Ooh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So looking at this autonomous vehicle bill that we have here before us, it is most certainly the work of what I would determine to be a veteran legislator. Whenever here in St. Paul we want to kill something, prevent it from happening, we always utilize one or two different pinpoints. We like things like task forces and studies. This one has one, a task force and a study. We also like to utilize the term safety as a reason why we have to do something or can't do something. That's two things. We also like to make things nearly impossible to change in the future by taking and saying the vehicles currently, the commissioner will have to put a human being in this vehicle permanently until we change our minds, essentially as a moratorium on the utilization of autonomous vehicles here in this state, by saying up until we change the law again, you must do it this way. So you are essentially saying, we will never allow autonomous vehicles in this state unless there's a human being in it doing whatever they're doing. I don't know, sitting on their phone. It very much defeats the purpose of an autonomous vehicle to have someone sitting there just twiddling their thumbs. And it's not going to change. This is a moratorium. We've had a moratorium on nuclear power for years and years and years because someone did exactly this. They said, we're going to do studies. We're going to make so much red tape that we've got you completely covered in it to prevent something from ever happening. This is the work of a legislative veteran because there are four tactics that are utilized to prevent autonomous vehicles from ever coming to the state of Minnesota. four of them. Usually we see one or two. We see the task force, we see the study, we see the utilization of the term safety. We make it impossible, one or two things. We create a moratorium. We wrap it so deeply in red tape. We do one of them. This one does four. So it's a really impressive piece of work, making sure that autonomous vehicles can never come to this state. But I do have one question here. So I tend to distrust the government, and I distrust people. All right, those are the kind of the two things in this world that I distrust. Here you are distrusting the Department of Transportation's Commission on Autonomous Vehicles. So you're saying we need a task force because we don't trust the Department of Transportation's task force that they've already had up and running for a number of years. And then we're also saying we distrust technology more than we distrust human drivers, who we know cause more accidents than the utilization of this technology. So can you explain to me, because I'm not seeing, like I said, I distrust the government as well as you do, because you're distrusting the DOT's Commission on Autonomous Vehicles, so I distrust that as well. But why do you trust human beings more than you trust this technology that's coming over? Please. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are you sure that was the end of the monologue?
Oh, I don't think it was a monologue. It was just a real great statement.
Just checking. Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson. Double belt, double spender, I guess, on this bill, because you said four things. No, I don't see this as a bill to do a moratorium. So I think the first thing I'll say is, in relation to the governor's study, you know, I know that there was deep work, I think, done with that study, with that task force. I think, you know, when I looked at the makeup of the task force, I felt like there was some really key people that should have been at the table that were not. I feel like that task force was a little bit tilted towards industry, and then we saw the recommendations coming out of that task force reflect that. You know, I will also say that as someone who lives in Minneapolis, I was really surprised by the timeline of the autonomous vehicle utilization in Minneapolis. All of a sudden, December 1st, I just woke up with an email that said Waymo is here. Like, so I think a lot of residents feel that way. Like, this is kind of coming very fast. And so while it was previously studied, I think I'm hearing a call from my residents who are most affected by Waymo right now that says, hey, slow down, you know, take a look at this. And I think, you know, on your questions around do we trust government, do we trust people, I don't trust big tech, and I don't have a problem saying that. I think, like, if the last decade show us anything, I think it's that government is always a few steps behind big tech. And I think our residents are saying, please try to do something differently. Please try to really vet this. We see what social media has done to our kids. We see some of the really negative things that have come from these promises of innovation. And so I think that's why I want us to slow down a little bit. You know, I heard one of the testifiers say, and if we had more time, I'd love to get into it, you know, that we could be looking at 455,000 jobs created by autonomous vehicles. I'd really love to know more about where that number comes from, because what I'm hearing is about not just, you know, autonomous vehicles, but about automation in general. Like, what are we going to do if everyone we know loses their job because of AI or because of automation? That's a huge thing that we need to be thinking about. And I think, you know, autonomous vehicles are one piece of that we really need to be looking at. I am open to conversations. I think we will have continued conversations about this. You know, we could potentially put some dates to come back and relook at some of this. I'm open to those conversations. But do I feel comfortable having these vehicles without any kind of person in the car right now? No. And I think that reflects the majority of Minnesotans.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sensenmira, you know, we talk about big governments always behind, and I think you're exactly right. I think they are behind. This is well-proven technology. It's in many states. And so my question to you, you know, we had different representatives testifying here, and they said that accidents are down 90%, ridership is up 140%. And my question to you is, we have a cost that's coming for the advisory board and the study. What will the cost be to the state for the study and for the Technical Advisory Board?
Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that we have requested a fiscal note on this, but I don't believe we have it yet, or is it in our...
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, a fiscal note was requested for this bill as soon as it was introduced. The agencies on the bill are the Secretary of State, the Legislature, the Governor, the Attorney General's Office, the Commerce Department, MnDOT, and the Department of Public Safety. Most of those agencies have reported back because they have people that would be on the task force in the proposed legislation, but the fiscal note is still in process as of right before the committee.
Representative Sitchin-Mayor.
So, I mean, I do think there will be a cost. I think it is worthwhile for us to take the time and invest and do some research on this. You know, I just want to speak also to the points that you made and that Representative Olson made. I mean, I think that there is a lots of promising things about potential safety, right? We have spent lots of time in this committee talking about how people are really bad drivers and how, you know, we want to do different things to try to make people better drivers. And if we can take humans and human error out of the equation, I'm not against that, but I think that we should slow things down.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sitchin-Mayor, for bringing this bill forward. I have a question about, do you have a sense of, so we've talked about that this technology is in many other places. Do we have a sense of, like, what an average ride costs in an AV?
Representative Sitchin-Mayor.
I don't have that. I don't know if, I mean, I do believe we have a representative of one company that could potentially.
I would be interested if they're available to comment on that.
Okay. I'm not sure. Let's see. Is Grady? If anybody would like to answer.
Mr. Chair, I could chime in.
Chair Cosney.
Not seeing a specific representative from any driverless company here, but the proposal isn't to have the state pay for it. It would be a free market thing. So I would presume that it's comparable to other transportation network rides. But I think the most important thing is that if people don't want to pay for it, they don't have to. So I'm not sure what the point of the question is, but I think that's valuable thoughts to consider.
Representative Jones. Mr. Marshall, sorry, we're not going to call on you at this point. Representative Jones, did you have a follow-up on that since you were
yes,
on here?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Thank you. And that, I think, is kind of getting at what my point is yes, having something that is driven by the free market is totally fine and acceptable, and we have that with the current TNCs. I think one of my concerns is the impact to transit and I really appreciate that in this in the proposed study that we're looking at potential congestion and vehicle miles traveled and things like that, particularly in cities, because I am worried about, like, also how does that impact in our transit network? Because we say, like, this is giving more choice. This is giving, you know, making this better for the entire transportation system. But if there are more people opting to, you know, there's more people opting to take that if they have the means to do so, that can have an impact, that can reduce ridership in a place where we have limited space and we're putting more vehicles on the roads while at the same time we're actually trying to encourage, you know, transit ridership. There's kind of some contention there. So I appreciate the way that this bill is taking, you know, slowing things down a little bit so we can take a look at that because, I am really interested in this technology going forward. I think there are definitely some gaps that it can be filling, but we need to be doing so in a thoughtful way going forward. So I appreciate this bill.
Thank you. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sitchin-Mayor. Will this bill make us stricter than California?
Representative Sitchin-Mayor.
Thank you for the question. I believe it would be stricter than California in a sense that I think in California right now you can the autonomous vehicles can operate without a driver, and this bill would not allow for that. But I'm not fully versed in California's laws.
Representative Joy.
Another question I have is, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative, who doesn't require operators in there right now? What states do not? Would we be the only state that requires a person to be sitting in there?
Representative Sitchin-Mayor.
Thank you, Representative Joy. I'm not familiar with every state's legislation about this. I do not know of a state that currently requires a driver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, my question about this is, if Representative Kraft was here, I'd be talking to him too, because I would imagine he would want the Waymo to move through fast, because we got a 2040 energy bill that the Democrats have put in, and all Waymo cars are electric. Uber and Lyft do drive gas cars. So as we're moving towards the clean energy movement, you would think we would want to get Waymo on the streets faster than anything.
Representative Joy, you've had a couple here. So is it quick?
Yep, I got another comment. Thank you. The other question is if we do add somebody in this car, right now, when we have Uber and Lyft, they put their prices out there what they are. If we add somebody to the car, is that considered an employee? Are we going to have to pay a wage? Are we going to have to pay paid family leave? Are we going to have to pay unemployment and everything in these cars? Will it make those rides more just because we're adding an employee in there, how that's going to go? If that's the department that can answer that or who can answer that question.
This is an independent company. It's on the independent company. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really sad that Bjorn, Representative Olson, doesn't trust anybody. Except for computers. Skynet's coming here. So the one thing that I'm very, very kind of curious about is, you know, a lot of us live in communities that will actually be affected by Waymo on this side of the aisle. And so I think, you know, when we hear from our constituents, it's actually real concerns because these are going to be driving in our neighborhoods. And so, you know, I think people are worried and scared and, you know, are afraid of change, you know. And I think that these are cool things. I think that we should have them in the state. But I also think that it's pragmatic to not let technology get ahead of us. I've been talking a lot with the folks from some of these EV company or AV, whatever they're called, AV companies, wanting to see if there's some way we can get labor peace agreements included in this, and they're not interested. One of the things that I've learned here being in commerce is how much that the market has been manipulated and rigged towards these giant corporations. And to me, it's really hard to defend corporate greed, but, you know, you guys do you. And so some of, like, the surveillance pricing that's been happening, where they're collecting our private information, our data, geolocating, charging us more if we have a low battery to get a ride. So if your battery is almost to zero, Uber and Lyft will surcharge that because they know that your phone's going to die and you need that ride. And so, you know, and I like that we're looking to California to set some policies. So, but I think that, you know, it's not bad to stop and not let the technology get ahead of us. And so I know I signed on Representative Kosnick's bill as well, but I think, you know, with some of the lack of the CAV recommendations in that bill, I think that it really behooves us to take a step back, take a deep breath, look at the technology, because the technology is being used against us. We are seeing this already on the massive amounts of data that they're collecting on us to make sure that they can, you know, hit our pain points when it comes to prices. And so not really a question, but I don't think it's a bad thing because people can be accountable, computers can't be. And my brother lives in LA and sees those Waymos. And, you know, I think it might be good for us just to kind of see how this works and then move forward.
Representative Sitchmere, did you have any comments you'd like to make on that? Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Chair. I think that it's great that we have this benefit of new technology, and I think a lot of us as human beings don't like to see change and don't like anything to ruffle feathers. We can look back and see a lot of things that are a lot different than they were in the past, even 10 years, but I just think that a human being in the car really defeats the purpose of the autonomous vehicle, and there are other states that are doing it, so it's not like completely, like it's some brand new thing that no one's ever heard of. So do you think that this bill is protecting current jobs at the expense of future economic growth?
Wait, was that a question or a statement? Representative Fogelman, was that a question or a statement? Question. Okay. Representative Sitchmere.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Fogelman. I mean, I think that's part of, you know, we need to weigh people losing their jobs. Like I said, I think we need to weigh that in every single sector that we are looking at, not just with autonomous cars. And I think we also need to really study what the benefits are. Are there real benefits to safety? Are there really 455,000 jobs that could be created? Like, if that is true, I'm really excited to learn more about that. But I think we're kind of asking the companies and we're asking this technology to come and prove some of those things, or we're asking us to do independent research to look into that, and that's what this bill is doing.
Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think that's on. I thought it might be helpful, and I appreciate getting a little nudge on the data piece, which, so there, San Francisco had a study conducted by OBI, which does aggregate rideshare prices, and they, their study window was between November and late January. And they found that Tesla, which is traveling with a human safety driver, is charging less than half of both Waymo as well as Uber and Lyft. And so that was about $2 per kilometer. And so that was a car with a driver, in case folks are interested in whether or not that changes the price, which some may or may not be interested in. But that meant that the median ride for those cars, and this is, I hesitate to say anything nice about Tesla ever, but this is, I think, good data for us to have, and I think it's why it is, in fact, a veteran move for us to convene a task force so that we can actually study data points. And that may seem funny to you, Representative Olson, but in fact, that's what we do when we are deliberative, is we aggregate data and we look at what the possible impacts are, such as, for example, if Waymo comes in high and actually drives up the price of competitive organizations because that's what they think the market can bear. That's not good for consumers either. So this is, I thank you, Representative Spencer Murrah.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Some things we heard earlier, one of the things, the autonomous vehicle was getting more aggressive over time. Well, if you drove into traffic like everyone else, actually you would be getting more aggressive. It's a human statement. I mean, you can take someone from the country, come down and drive in the city, within a month they're like, how do you guys live like this? This is crazy. So I don't see, I see how the computer did that. Transit, if this really affects transit, perhaps it would lower the transit costs because they would shift them. Instead of having big vehicles, you'd have smaller vehicles. The issue that we're kind of struggling with, I think, right now is what in the early 1900s, what the horse people and the motor vehicle people, they didn't see it coming this big, but when it happened fast and they couldn't react. So I think what we're, our reactions are natural. I think it's natural that we're, you know, hey, wait a minute, there's a lot of people's jobs involved here. How can we get into this and still represent everyone? So I agree it should slow it down here a little bit. The government doesn't create innovation. Government regulates it. Big business creates it, or not big business, just small businesses, any business, private industry. But one of the things that kind of concerned me was when I saw the makeup of the advisory board, it's actually 10 governor employees and 3 that are not. So whoever the next governor is going to get 10 appointees on a 13-member board. That's already done, whatever it is. That's the way it is. I don't think that's fair. I think that's very unfair. But the question I have is, let's say this gets through. How long do you think the operators are going to be needed in the vehicle? The reason I get the 10 is the governor appoints the commissioner of commerce, commissioner of transportation, governor points all these people plus the other 7 on there. So there's 10, sorry. So how long would the safety operators be needed if they're in the vehicle? When do you think it's safe to say we're no longer is there a person allowed in this vehicle?
Representative Spencer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. I think that's a great question, and that's one of the things that I'd want the advisory board to look at. Like I'm saying, I'm not against there ever being autonomous vehicles that are able to safely go around our streets without a driver. I just don't think that we're there yet. And I think that we at this committee are looking into some of this, but lots of questions have come up today that we don't have the answers to. And so I know that my constituents are saying, before you put these vehicles on the road without a driver, do some more work on this. And that's what that board would do. So I don't have a great answer for this, but I'm happy to, you know, I know that Chair Kosnick has a different bill, happy to work and talk about potential timelines for that.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. I appreciate having another bill to discuss this important topic. It was quoted over the weekend that the House is confused. I'm not sure that we are. Republicans are here, want to advance and embrace this technology and bring forward the promise and potential that autonomous vehicles will bring, not just to a rider that wants to get from point A to point B, but the potential for economic growth, the potential for safer roads, the potential for more consistent and reliable transit for transit-dependent folks. We heard a lot from our disabled community. Just a couple feedbacks, or maybe I'll just start with a question. You know, I think your bill, and maybe you don't agree, would discourage automated vehicle companies from investing in Minnesota, just flat out. I think your bill will discourage investment in Minnesota from automated vehicle and technology companies in Minnesota. Do you disagree with that?
Representative Sensenmayer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Kosdick. I disagree with that because they are already here. They are already investing. And like you've mentioned, this is not just about one company, right? We are trying to make regulations for the entire swath of autonomous vehicle companies that are already in place or maybe will be built in the future. I think that's one of the reasons why I think it's really important to have some really solid state regulations in place. Just because one company is telling us that they have, you know, enough safety to be able to operate, that doesn't mean that everyone else would, right? And so that's why I don't want to do regulations based on just one company. But one company is already here. They're already investing. As I understand from that specific company that should not be named, you know, growth plan.
Well, we could name them, just not disparage them.
They have a robust plan to grow across the United States. And so I think that there are many markets that are part of that plan. I think certainly because they are already mapping here in the Twin Cities, they see the Twin Cities as part of that market. And, you know, again and again, we at the legislature are held hostage by companies that say, basically, give us everything you want, we want, or else we will leave. And I think we just need to stop playing that game. I don't want to play that game with big tech anymore. I think my DFL colleagues are really, really firm on that.
Chair Kosdick.
Well, thank you. I guess we have a difference of approach on this. I think only in Minnesota, when you mandate that you have to have a driver in a driverless vehicle, only in Minnesota, when you have that level of regulation, you're discouraging those innovators from investing in Minnesota. So there is a little bit of confusion. I think we have different approaches. And again, we want to embrace innovation in Minnesota in our economy and for our transit riders to have those potentials. Just a couple things. Unfortunately, we weren't able to progress the other bill on automated vehicles into the other committees. You'd mentioned a couple incidents, one in Arizona. More recently, there was an incident where there was an emergency response in Austin. There was a vehicle that was driving down a one-way, and a fire engine was rushing against the one-way to get to the emergency site, and the vehicle didn't know what to do. But within 3 minutes, because it has a preactive incident response mechanism, a law enforcement officer was able to kind of maybe not the right technical term, but get into the vehicle and move it off to the side so the fire engine could get to where it needs to go. Within 3 minutes or less, that happened. Very important. So there are opportunities that I wish the Public Safety Committee could address that, and maybe we can improve on that. There was a lot of talk about the task force. I think Representative Scraba had mentioned that. In this bill, it is very stacked against innovation. There aren't people on here that would be able to weigh in fairly on how to advance innovation in this policy area. As I mentioned, automated technology does have the potential to augment our transportation system. We're going to be hopefully, I think the Met Council people left, but you know they've been working on for well over a decade, the Southwest, the Green Line extension. Hopefully, automated vehicles will augment people that want to use that a light rail train or a commuter express bus, and people won't have to own an actual vehicle in the future. We will have vehicles in kind of a shared economy. You don't have to invest $80,000 in your own vehicle. It may be less expensive, especially in some of the more dense areas, to use some of these systems and augment the investments that we're making in our bus and train system, especially in the core cities. It will provide more reliable transportation for those that are transit dependent when they can access the different vehicles that we heard a lot of people testify to. And then finally, I don't think we should stifle innovation as your bill does, Representative. We shouldn't stifle innovation. We have a business benchmark report that I'd be happy to share with the committee. And you know, Minnesota is very proud of our skilled and talented workforce, and I think when we talk about this policy area, there's opportunity that we might be able to enhance, and I've talked about it on the other bill, to retrain people for their higher and better use of their potential rather than just driving from point A to point B, that they can be mechanics, engineers, technicians, and maintenance, and software engineers to work in this automated vehicle industry. But so we do have a strong foundation, skilled workforce, but innovative measures are slowing in Minnesota. In fact, Minnesota ranks 47th in patent growth over the last decade. One of the promises and what things that's so exciting about automated vehicles is that we can spur a whole nother economy in Minnesota. We are lagging in tech growth. The state's tech sector does expand, but continues to expand more slowly. We're ranking 44th in tech job growth. And so I'm excited to continue to have this conversation, but I think there's very confusing approaches. Respectfully, your approach stifles innovation. It kills an automated vehicle industry from wanting to invest in Minnesota, and that's the wrong way that we should be going. We should not stifle innovation in Minnesota. We should move forward with some guardrails, and we'll continue to have that discussion. Members, I would not support passing this bill. I think the motion was to Commerce.
Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means. I would oppose passing it to Ways and Means because it does stifle innovation in Minnesota.
And thank you, Chair Kozak. And I just want to have a couple comments. Roll call has been requested. So a couple comments on that as well is that I really appreciate Representative Sensenmira and all the advocates and folks who've been working together on finding a path forward for AVs and how we can do this in Minnesota. And I think what this bill does bring, especially after Representative Sensenmira's amendment, is to have a very broad-based intermediate step that we are able to understand how autonomous vehicles will work in Minnesota and could work in Minnesota. This is not stifling. This is not stopping progress. This is not doing anything like that, in my opinion. What is happening is that it is moving forward on the ability to have autonomous vehicles in Minnesota, but also making sure that they are safe for Minnesotans, making sure that this is not Representative Scraba talked about how there are a bunch of governor appointees on the task force. Like, when you guys brought your amendment, your bill forward first, we brought a lot of amendments to help make sure that it could work and make sure that it could get to where we think that as partnership in this could go. I'm extremely disappointed there are no amendments that came to this bill today to make it work, because it could move forward and it could get things done. And so I wish that that had happened, and that hopefully this means that we have two different paths forward that could mesh to make something work. But I don't know if that's possible or not. So just hoping that people can work together to find a path forward to get this done. So closing comments, Representative Sensenmira, and then we'll have a roll call vote.
Real quick.
Oh, real quick. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if this was already answered. Thank you, Chair. Is there a fiscal note on this, or was it requested?
We already talked about that. There's a fiscal note requested, and it was due tomorrow, I believe, is when it was due, and so it would be ready for Ways. Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you, Chair and members, for the robust discussion. Just wanted to touch on a few points. I hesitate to talk too much about VMT without Representative Kraft in the room, but, you know, I did want to say in relation to some of I think your questions, you know, Representative Scraba, I think the kind of fuel or, you know, fuel versus electric is really important. But I've heard, you know, Representative Kraft also talk about, you know, no matter the kind of vehicle, we want to reduce vehicle miles traveled. Any vehicle that is going on our roads is creating wear and tear. It's something that we as a state have to pay for. That's why we included through the amendment that we should be studying VMT in relation to autonomous vehicles and how they may impact. I know that there was some question about prices, right? I don't really see a way where these autonomous vehicle companies are helping life be more affordable for Minnesotans. You know, I think that when we look at data across the country, we see that generally autonomous vehicle rides are about 10% more than rideshare driver rides. I know that when I was in San Francisco, I looked between doing a Lyft and a Waymo. A Waymo was about twice as much. You know, I also want to speak to a point that you brought up, Chair Kozak, around first responders, right? And you talked about the incident where a first responder was able in 3 minutes to go in, deactivate the car, to, you know, stop what could have been a kind of a scary situation. To me, that sounds like a great argument to have someone in the car who could do that in 30 seconds or 10 seconds instead of 3 minutes. 3 minutes oftentimes in those first responder situations can be the difference between life and death. And so that to me speaks to maybe this technology isn't ready, and it'd be great to have someone in the car who can make that split second decision. And finally, you know, I want to speak to one of the points raised about when we look at who's going to be on the task force, it's tilted to people who are against innovation. And I think that that's frankly a little bit disrespectful to Minnesota workers. This task force is really trying to put workers who are going to be most impacted by the coming changes at the forefront of making decisions. And when I talk to rideshare drivers, I don't see them as against innovation. Rideshare drivers are entrepreneurs, right? They are people who are creating their own businesses. So they are not against innovation, but I think we as a state legislature need to be wrestling with the big question of what are we going to do when everyone we know loses their job because of AI or automation. And I think the people that are going to help us figure out that solution are the workers. So I do want to put them at the center of that conversation. So thank you for the discussion. I think, you know, with this bill, we in the DFL are not confused. We are pro-worker, we are pro-affordability, and we are pro-protections for Minnesotans. Thank you.
With that, Representative Sensenmiller renews her motion that House File 4216, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. We'll take the roll, please.
Chair Tabke.
Aye.
Tabke, aye. Chair Kosnick.
Kosnick votes no.
Kosnick, no. Vice Chair Ream.
Aye.
Ream, aye. Vice Chair Myers.
Nay.
Myers, no. Representative Anderson. Representative Fogelman. Fogelman, no. Representative Green?
Yes.
Green, aye. Representative Jones?
Jones, aye.
Jones, aye. Representative Joy? Joy, no. Representative Kegel? Kegel, aye. Representative Kraft? Representative Luger-Nikolai?
Aye.
Luger-Nikolai, aye. Representative Murphy?
No.
Murphy, no. Representative Olson? Olson, no. Representative Sensenmiller?
Aye.
Sensenmiller, aye. Representative Scraba?
No.
Scraba, no. Representative Anderson? Representative Kraft?
Thank you very much. With that, the motion does not prevail. All right, we've got two more bills we want to get through quickly here, so we're going to take a little extra time today. We've got some testifiers on House File 3176. Chair Kegel moves that to House File 3176 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. You have an A1 author's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
All those in favor of the A1 author's amendment, say aye. 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 All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Chair Kegel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the bill that would direct Minnesota MnDOT to get into the corridor ID program for the rail extension services down through Kansas City. And so you'll see in your packet, there is a bunch of letters of support from all sorts of different chambers of commerce and cities along the line. These stations tend to do a lot of economic development around them and kind of bring some of these small cities back to life. And so hoping we can move this bill out. And I do have some testifiers.
Thank you very much. First testifier is Mr. Rigg from Albert Lea. Is he on Zoom?
Yep.
On
Thank
Zoom.
You.
Mr. Rigg, you've got about 90 seconds if you could please go for it. Sorry to cut you short.
That's quite all right. Ian Rigg, City Manager of Albert Lea. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for having me today. The City of Albert Lea fully supports HF 3176. Our strategic plan looks at creating alternative transportation mods and options for our residents and the region. If a passenger rail line were to be installed from Minneapolis to Kansas City, it would open up many opportunities in Albert Lea in southern Minnesota. Where there are stops along passenger rails, there are new opportunities for economic growth in service and retail industry. There are alternative transportation exists, there are expanded opportunities for employment and residency. Further analysis is needed to determine the viability of such an opportunity. As part of our climate action plan, strategic plan, and comprehensive plans, efforts to open the community to more travel opportunities is necessary. Approximately 13% of our residents do not have a vehicle for travel. and more do not have reliable transportation for the same safe travel a passenger rail could provide. We hope this committee can support this bill.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Mr. Dunwoody.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, please proceed.
Perfect. Co-Chair Tapke and Co-Chair Kosnick, for the record, my name is Cale Dunwoody, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Vice President of Public Policy for the Fargo-Moorhead-West Fargo Chamber of Commerce. With Representative join the room, I better add Holly to that as well, the Fargo-Moorhead-Holly Chamber of Commerce. On behalf of our over 1,600 members, I respectfully offer this testimony in support of this bill. Really, we believe that establishing a new daylight or daytime passenger rail service between the FM Metro that I represent and St. Paul really embodies our mission by promoting economic growth for our region while preserving and providing a convenient and affordable transportation option for all residents and visitors. The benefits of this passenger rail service are clear, and many stations, station cities have seen significant economic value, often finding returns 3 to 4 times greater than the initial investment. As the fastest growing county outside of the Twin Cities Metro, a consistent and accessible connection between the Fargo-Moorhead region and St. Paul will just bolster additional tourism, increased mobility, and overall connect community statewide. Just with the time, I just want to say appreciate the opportunity to testify before this committee and would encourage you to support the bill. Thank you for your attention to this matter and your commitment to Minnesota.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dunwoody. Next up, we have Mr. Nelson from All Aboard Minnesota. Please state your name for the record and proceed, sir. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for being here. I'm Brian Nelson with All Aboard Minnesota. We're a nonprofit citizen advocacy group seeking to expand long-distance passenger rail throughout Minnesota and the upper Midwest. In 2021, when Congress passed the IIJA Act, $36 billion were set aside for federal-state partnerships to advance passenger corridor rail service throughout the nation. This is administered through the Federal Railroad Administration in their Corridor ID program. And in 2022, the FRA advanced 59 applications in 7 states around the upper Midwest. And the reason these states are investing in passenger rail is due to the success that they have seen in ridership growth and fare box recovery for services in their state. For example, corridor trains defined as 750 miles or less in the Midwest see on average 8 to 12% growth per year, and fare box recovery goes up every year. So the state, this bill would advance these two routes within the state of Minnesota, connecting us to the Amtrak long distance network and a direct north-south connection. And so we urge support of this bill. The Borealis is an example of a corridor state run program within the state of Minnesota. In its first year, it exceeded ridership estimates by over 50%. And these are new riders. These are not cannibalizing ridership on the current Amtrak Empire Builder service in this corridor. So, and typically, investment in passenger rail sees for every dollar invested, there's $5 in economic return. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Quickly, Representative Green.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Representative Cagle, for bringing this bill forward. You know, we just had a pretty robust conversation about pro-business and pro-innovation, and I can't think of anything more pro-business and innovation than to bring in rail and connecting regions within our state with other states. And I love the data that you just brought forward. $1 invested is $5 back. So this is a no-brainer to me. I'm a huge supporter, and I'm a frequenter on the Borealis, which is fantastic.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair. One of the things I see in this is we're going to study having a rail from Fargo to St. Paul for $1 million. It's kind of like we were just hearing about the Waymo and the Uber Lyft thing that we're competing, taking jobs away. You know, currently today there's an Amtrak train that comes back and forth. And so I'm just curious about, you know, we're overstepping that. I think spending $1 million right now in the way our economy and the way our budget is, I think I think this needs to be laid over, which I think it is, and I'm glad it's getting laid over because it needs more study, because just spend $1 million right now, not fiscally responsible. Thank you.
Representative Joy, we are moving this to Ways and Means is where this one's going. So we'll have a vote on that. Closing comments, Chair?
Yeah, just to close, I won't be supporting this. We do not have supplemental budget targets. So we're spending money here, and we don't know that our committee will be able to do that. Further, I just disagree with the expense. This is kind of like creep. Give it a little bit of money, and then we have to follow good money after bad money. So I will vote no.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with the amendment, we're actually the federal grant would pay for the entire first phase of this. And so, and you're right, we do have Amtrak that goes up to Fargo-Moorhead, and this would actually put a second train that goes up to Fargo-Moorhead on that Amtrak, so it would still be Amtrak. We'd just get more service. And so there would be a daylight train now that goes from Fargo-Moorhead down to Minneapolis. And so I think, you know, this is good for business. This is good for the communities along the line. And you know what? None of these communities are in my area. So I think when we're looking at Detroit Lakes or Staples, Little Falls, where Fort Camp Ripley is, these are good things for your guys' communities. And so I would absolutely suggest getting on board.
Well done. All right. All those in favor. Sorry, I got to renew the motion here. So renew the motion that House File 3128 as amended. 3176 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. All right, Representative Vice Chair Myers, we're going to do 3988 quick. If your testifier will come up with you, Mr. Hosmer. So Vice Chair Myers moves that House File 3988 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. It'll take about 6 seconds and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3988. It's a bill trying to address one of the biggest things that we're tasked to do here is safety on our roadways. So right now, Minnesota drivers age 18 or older are not required to complete driver's education before getting a license. What this bill would do is modify that requirement, requiring anyone under the age of 21 to complete driver's education course before obtaining a driver's license. I could get into a bunch of statistics, but I'm going to let the testifier go.
Mr. Hosmer, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yeah, my name is Pete Hosmer. I'm the president of MIDSIA, which is the association for all the driving instructors in the state. I'm also a member of the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety, and I own a private driving school as well. Committee chairs and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm here in support of House File 3988, expanding Minnesota's driver's education requirement so that 18 to 20-year-old drivers are required to complete driver's training. At its core, this is a safety bill. This is doing what we can to keep the roads safe. Driving is the most dangerous thing we do every day, and inexperience behind the wheel creates risk, regardless of anyone's age. Data shows us that drivers 18, 19, and 20 that skipped driver's education are most dangerous drivers. Currently, only drivers under 18 have to complete driver's education, which includes 30 hours of class, 50 hours of driving with their parents, and 6 hours of behind the wheel. But if you're 18, 19, or 20, or older, you're able to skip those 90 hours of training entirely and go straight to the testing. Driver's education teaches critical skills that go far beyond memorizing just the rules to pass the test.
Mr. Hosmer,
like managing distractions.
Sorry, we got to get going.
Yes. So this bill would be to put safer drivers on our roads, not just what's the difference between a 19-year-old and a 17-year-old?
Thank you. Chair Kosnick.
I have a lot of concerns about this bill. Short on time, I'd recommend a no vote.
You didn't want a roll call on that?
Sure, we'll do a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Final closing comments.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to bring something meaningful, and it's all about options and opportunities to increase roadway safety for everybody that uses this, passengers, other states, Ohio, Washington, Texas, Maryland. I've passed stuff like this as a soon-to-be father of a driver. I think it's important that we do what we can to make our roads as safe as possible.
Thank you. Please call the roll.
Chair Tabke.
Oh, sorry, I got to say that that Vice Chair Myers renews his motion the House File 3988 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you,
now.
Chair.
Chair Tapke?
Aye.
Chair Tapke, aye. Chair Kosnick?
No.
Kosnick, no. Vice Chair Ream?
Aye.
Ream, aye. Vice Chair Myers?
Aye.
Myers, aye. Representative Anderson? Representative Fogelman?
Fogelman, no. Representative Green?
Aye.
Green, aye. Representative Jones?
No.
Jones, no. Representative Joy? Joy, no. Representative Kegel? No. Kegel, no. Representative Kraft? Representative Luger-Nicolai?
Aye.
Luger-Nicolai, aye. Representative Murphy? Murphy, no. Representative Olson? Representative Sensenmura? Aye. Sensenmura, aye. Representative Scraba?
No.
Scraba, no.
With 6 ayes and 7 noes, the motion does not prevail. All right, thank you very much, everyone. I apologize for running over. We got a lot done today, so this meeting is adjourned.